Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo, episode number 56, recorded on Tuesday, May 8th, 2012. Eddie Tapp.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWITPHOTO5. And now they offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. It's time for TWiT Photo. We're back, baby. The show that I kind of look forward to all week because I love photography, I love art, and I love photographers. And we get to talk to a great photographer about their work, see it, and find out what inspires them. It's so much fun. I'm glad you're here today. But let's start with the photographer I love the most, the dear Catherine Hall. We had so much fun in Norway.
Yes, we did. I'm wearing the Norway shirt.
You are.
And you were supposed to wear yours.
I didn't know I was supposed to. I have a T-shirt,
not
too.
Not to bed, here.
They gave out these T-shirts, and everyone had a different photograph.
Yeah.
This is
I love mine. Mine's my favorite one.
Gerard Mark Mankiewicz, his picture of Jimi Hendrix. I had a Gilbert Garcin. Beautiful Gilbert. I'll wear it next time.
When you're doing the announcement.
Because next week, you won't be here. No. Next 2 weeks, you can get some time off because what we're going to do is it'll be a best of. Now, I'll be here introducing the segments, but it'll be the best of the Nordic Light Festival. And we have interviews.
We have amazing interviews.
I mean, Bruce Davidson.
Mary Ellen Mark.
We've got Greg Gorman. We've got James Mollison. Amazing
photographers.
So
it'll be some of our best episodes, I would say.
It's almost like you're going to get 5 TWiT photos in one because, you know, we've got all these great interviews.
And get to see footage from Norway.
Yes, if we finish it.
We have to.
I've got some Lightroom work to do.
I actually need a deadline to actually finish.
Well, we have a deadline.
See, Morris is excited about Mary Ellen. I am excited about Mary Ellen.
She's an amazing photographer, and her husband, Martin Bell, who was also there.
Yeah.
Or partner. I don't know if they're husband and wife.
Husband, partner.
Is a filmmaker.
Well, Lisa's your wife, according to everyone at Nordic Light.
Is that what they said?
Yeah.
I think that's a Norwegian phrase for girlfriend.
Do you know what I found out, which was a huge compliment?
What?
One of the girls from Norway came up to me and said that, congratulations. And I said, what do you mean? She said, after your talk, you got the blah, blah, blah subname. And I said, what's that? And she said, it's when in Norway, when everyone claps at the same time.
Yeah, they were doing the rhythmic clapping.
It's the same as like a U.S. version of a standing ovation.
Wow.
And she said I was the only
one.
That's
because you burst into tears at the end of it. Oh, yeah. No, that was something else.
I think I like to cry. So anyway.
Anyway, we're really thrilled to be back. We had a great time. We thank everybody. Annalisa and Odinga, and of course,
oh my gosh, Odd! I want to just say, and Annalisa,
and the organizers were just fantastic,
amazing,
gave us a great time. Mikkel Oland, our photographer buddy,
yes,
who got us there. It was a really wonderful time. If you get a chance, they're going to do it again next year, and I'm sure many years to come. This is their 7th. If you ever get a chance to go to the Nordic Light Festival in Kristiansand,
absolutely go. You will not regret it.
Must go.
So,
and thanks to Doug Kay and to, I think, Frederick.
Frederick was here, and
Van
Sarah.
Johnson showed up, and of course, Sarah Lane for hosting TWiT Photo last
while
week.
While we were gone. So, speaking of falling, I am going to do a photo walk, a photo limp.
Yeah, because you broke your foot You broke some portion of your body.
I'm going to do a photo limp.
In Norway. She fell off a bicycle. We just say she was mountain biking off a mountain.
Yeah. And it was my 5D in tote.
Which is okay, though.
It's okay.
Okay. But you are going to be doing a photo walk in May 21st. That's just a couple of weeks from now.
Right before the Google Plus conference.
This is in Mountain View?
No, it's actually going to be in San Francisco. So there's you can see a bunch of
those people are all going to be there?
They're all going to be doing
photo walks. Trey's going to be there? Or no, they're all doing different walks.
No,
and you're doing
all
yours
in San
with
Francisco.
Doug Kay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and then afterwards, we're all going to come together. So this will be like the biggest, best photo walk.
Is Google
ever
putting this on, or just some Google Plus
Google
people?
Google and Scott Kelby are doing it together.
The Google Plus Photographers Conference, produced by Kelby Training. And for more information, gpluspc.com, gpluspc.com, and you can register.
And so there's a photo walk is on Monday, and then Tuesday and Wednesday, there's going to be seminars and Colby portfolio
Brown,
reviews.
Alex Koloskov, R.C. Concepcion.
Yeah, tons of great people there.
Catherine Hall, Scott Kelby. There's 10 different photo walks. Wow.
I know.
Wow.
So it should be a lot of fun.
So they're, and they're all the same day at the same time?
Yep.
You're competing?
I know.
Well,
so
everybody
sign
has
up
to
for
sign,
mine.
Up for,
sign up for
Catherine
me.
And Doug.
Do it.
You're
going to
be a Fisherman's Wharf. That actually is a great...
That's a great
that's
location.
That's the only place
Come
where you can get
me.
The seals. The famous San Francisco
yeah,
seal
see?
Eyes. Yeah, they go... Oh, oh, oh.
Come to me for the seals.
Yeah, that's... I mean...
if nothing else, just to see the
you
seals. Should,
you could actually choose it based on photographer, but you might also choose it based on location.
I think both.
These
yeah.
are all very different locations. That's interesting. What fun.
So I'm just waiting for mine to turn gray, which means I'm sold out.
Oh, really?
So I need so
nobody's
I need you guys
gray
to
yet.
Help me.
By the end of this show, we want everybody... And you don't have to sign up for the conference
oh, no,
to go
do.
To the photo walk.
You do
oh,
have
you do?
To sign up. Because they have to have a limit. They can't have... They
can't
don't
just
want
be
have
anybody.
It would be too many people.
That would be not okay. So who's our guest today?
So it's quite an honor to have Eddie with us today.
I'm so excited Eddie
He's
Tan is
a,
here.
Yeah, digital pioneer, a Canon Explorer of Light, Photoshop Hall of Fame, incredible person.
When did
Very
you start
kind.
Shooting digital?
I stopped shooting film in 1993.
What? What are you, nuts?
I was crazy.
That's what I think.
What, I mean, 93, what was it? It was the Apple QuickTake or something. What were you using?
No, it was a JVC analog to digital signal. It took about 7 minutes to create an image. But it was so good that it was worthy of prepress. So I started shooting. I was shooting the covers for KEH Digital or KEH Used Camera.
Right.
Supply company. I did that for about 13 years.
And they were shooting those covers digitally.
I started shooting digital back
93.
Then.
But
yeah.
See, that's the question, though, is you say the quality's better, but how can, compared to Hasselblad, was it the quality really?
The quality, for doing line screen, 150 line screen printing,
yeah,
300 DPIs, we would call it, for 8.5 by 11 covers was...
More than adequate.
It was more than adequate, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So, but you switched completely, right? You just, well, 1993, it was digital time.
Pretty much. The only thing I kept on film back then was shooting 4x5 with the PP of A loan book. I used to photograph the photographs that went in the loan book. And I continued to do that on film for 5 or 6 more years before we switched that over to digital.
But why go digital when there's so many good choices in the 90s? There's, film was better. Why go digital? I mean... Were you making a statement?
Not necessarily making a statement as much as seeing the future. This is really coming down the
yeah.
pike. And
yeah.
if it's going to do that, it's got to be a certain level of quality.
Right.
So I found that quality.
We didn't even have the tools then, though. There was no Photoshop back then, was there?
There was Photoshop.
Oh, there was Photoshop.
There was Photoshop
back then. There's no CF cards.
And okay. my first real experience, there's a picture in there somewhere, the very first cover I did with KEH and the second one. Which was much better, but the very first cover incorporated using the Photoshop pen tool, which was, you know, a very, very difficult pool to use. That's an Eddieism.
A pool is a tool with a pull of the Photoshop pull.
You got it.
That's the tool. That's the pull. So is that in the items of interest folder? Now I want to see this cover.
Yeah, you'll
first
see.
First digital 001, that must be it. Is that it?
That is it. That's the very first digital cover.
Actually, that looks pretty good.
For KEH, yes.
That ain't bad.
And that was pen tooling all the items.
Each of these is a separate photograph.
Each one was a separate.
Compositing.
So did anyone say this is a phase, this is going to go away when you were switching?
No, it was something that, looking at, hey, this is the future. I was already into digital pre-press. That's where I cut my teeth anyway,
uh-huh.
scanning and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I saw the future right away.
By the way, that EOS is a film camera. We just want to point that
is
out.
Is it really?
that is really interesting. So you went from this JVC, which is basically a video.
It was a video
camera,
signal.
Is what
yeah.
it really was.
Right.
When did you start using kind of true digital cameras?
I went from that to a Dicamed Scanback, mm-hmm. which was a very high resolution, extremely
yeah.
wonderful chip. And then my first real digital camera that you could do portraits with was a Kodak 420.
Wow. Wow.
What was the megapixels on that?
4 megapixels, maybe. Yeah. Maybe three.
With a 256. They had cards by then, correct?
Oh,
you were probably recording it out. I bet
you
were taking video out,
Yeah, he was doing it straight
to
the computer.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it just shows you that this megapixel race is kind of nutty. Because after all, you were able to get really good images with 3 or 4 megapixels.
Right? Oh, yeah, you were. The quality, you know, was there, indeed.
Do you see that as a problem? That like, the cameras keep getting to a point where it's not, it's yieldy, the files are so big.
Megapixel, schmegapixel is my take on that.
But why do you think there's such, why do you think everyone quantifies quality by megapixel, and why does it not really matter?
I think what really matters is the quality of the pixel itself. You know, the information
interesting.
That you can acquire in there.
And that's impacted by not merely the sensor, although the sensor has a lot of impact, but also the lenses and the body and everything else.
Absolutely.
And the software used.
That's 90%.
Software.
The software. When I worked with Vovion as one of their testers, what I learned from that entire experience is that 90% of the battle is, in fact, software.
Vovion was Carver Mead's,
Absolutely.
New way of recording light, this new chip, and he was focused on the hardware, but you're saying the software was really made the difference.
Well, yeah. Well, Carver's scientist.
Right.
And
right.
I work very closely together with that. So, right. Yes.
Interesting.
So why Canon?
Why Canon?
Yeah.
I love Canon equipment. I love their equipment. Their equipment does exactly what I need. I just chose Canon. I have photographed, used Nikon and Sony. And
this is kind of an update of that KEH cover, only this time with a 5D.
you are very perceptual there, Leo. That was my choice. With all the covers I've done, I've got hundreds and hundreds of covers. And as I was looking through my list recently, it's like, you know what? I need to do something with these things. I've got hundreds of camera shots.
Because those catalogs are long gone, but...
Yes, they are.
But the picture should live on. I mean, there's some history in this.
And I've got great shots of cameras, so I want to do something with that soon.
This was obviously the Christmas, probably of a couple of years ago.
That was trying to remember the name of the software I did the balls in was... it'll come to me later. But that was fun to do.
I bet.
It was fun to create that.
It's my favorite, one of my
so
favorite
So you remember lenses. The original, Leo, do you?
The original?
Picture I did there.
Yeah. Should I go back to it?
No, because I don't have it here.
Oh, okay.
But we'll talk about that another time.
Okay, yeah. if I had it, I would show you. You tell me about the original. No, I want to hear it. I love this. This is his cake for his 60th birthday. Was that this year?
That was a few years ago. That's a 5D Mark II. Judy had that done for me. And, yeah, it was...
Same 50-millimeter lens, by the way. Same 1.4 as on the cover.
Oh, that's great.
So I showed that to Canon, and they said, I'm getting close to infringing on copyright.
I think that's pretty darn close. But they haven't yet figured out how to do licorice icing. That's the only thing that's missing.
Delicious, by the way.
Oh, I bet that was
it?
Good. Isn't that funny? Look at that. He's actually only 6 years old.
Yeah, there you go.
Actually, I was 70 years old.
So you talk a lot about color.
I love color, yes.
It's one of the funny things. We're at this Nordic Light Festival, and they're doing all the photographers, and it's black and white shot after black and white shot.
They're black and white, too.
Yeah, who doesn't love black and white? And yet, I think in the digital world, maybe we're kind of coming around more to black and white. I think more and more people are taking black and white images. But when digital first started, it was about color, right? Oh, my gosh, how bright and vibrant these colors are. But the one thing I hear all the time from people is, how do I get the color I saw to come out on the screen and then come out on the printer? It's very hard.
That's not easy, and color management is the mechanism to allow you to do that.
Right.
And back in the mid-90s, I kind of cut my teeth on creating profiles the hard way, reading one little patch at a time.
Oh, gosh, so arduous.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And but it was exciting to see the workflow, the first published color-managed workflow that I saw published out there was Stephen Johnson was in Texas, and he was going on press with an image, and it was the first, because there was a lot of information back then during that time, but nobody told you how to do it until this one article came out with Stephen Johnson. Right. It was exciting.
But well, it's challenging because the screen's emissive, the paper is reflective, it's generating color in a different way.
Absolutely.
I mean, all of this is very challenging. Is this the JVC setup? I don't know. Is that the JVC setup?
No, it is not.
Okay.
But that is Carver Mead's Foveon.
This is
camera.
The first Foveon.
Yes, that is first Foveon camera. Dean Collins shot those images. He was very involved in getting this off the ground. But that is a Dell computer with a Canon lens sticking out the front of it.
Wow.
And it was a brilliant,
it's obviously a prototype. This wasn't how he was going to sell it.
No, that was the...
Really? Yeah. They sold it that way?
I still have mine.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
And other camera companies have licensed the Foveon. What's happening with the Foveon?
Well, Foveon, what you just saw is a camera. That is no longer available.
Right.
What Foveon did, their scientists, they kept developing that technology because the technology itself was grainless. There was no grain with that imaging. However, that camera had three chips in it, so there was a beam splitter, and as the light would come in, it would go to a red, green, and then blue chip. That's why there was no noise.
And it's for studio use, obviously. I mean,
what was the typical exposure? Was it different or the same?
Oh, it's just, you know, at 1/25th of a second, you know, using strobes.
Now, I think Sigma's using it, the Foveon,
Yes. Now, Foveon came up with a different chip.
It's different.
A totally different
chip. It's not a three-chip solution. It's not color
It's split a three-layered chip now. Instead of having a three-chip solution, Foveon's current chip is layered, just like film has layer dyes. Somehow, I don't know how to explain there.
It's magic.
It's magic.
Yeah. But that's our.
Now I was wrong. I said it's a studio camera, but that didn't stop Eddie from going out and using it
in Yosemite. Yeah. Right.
Yosemite. Ansel Adams would have just said, "What the hell is that?"
I was just testing. That was my tripod.
That's really interesting. Tripod. Yeah. And how did those images come out?
They came out well. Yeah. Very well, actually.
Yeah.
You know, the camera was incredibly sharp and noiseless. It was just slow.
So why didn't it take off? Why aren't we using Foveon chips in all our cameras now?
I don't know, but that was the first CMOS chip to hit the market. Everything else was CCD.
Right. So now everything is CMOS, of course.
Pretty much everything now is CMOS.
Yeah. So that did change things a little bit. Is this a Foveon image that we're looking at?
That was an image that made with the Foveon camera, photographed that at DEMA right before PMA. And they loved the image so much, by the end of the day, they had 40-by-60-inch posters of that image all over the place.
And go ahead and look for grain.
Just try to find
some grain. Now, it needs a lot of light. That was probably one of the issues, right?
Strobes light, because ISO 6 is very slow.
ISO 6?
That was the true ISO.
6.
Right.
That gives you some idea of why it might not have been super popular.
Off. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Not a good enthusiast.
You're not going to shoot a wedding with it.
Right. But boy, that would be a good looking bride, right? I mean, look at her.
She's gorgeous.
Wow.
But, Leo, what's wonderful about that image, I had the model turn her head around and come flying around.
Oh, there's not a fan. That's her hair.
There's not
just
a fan. She's twisting around, and she just landed right
she's
in the focal
model.
Point.
She just landed right in there.
She is a good model. Wow. Very interesting.
So they function as normal? You can switch the lenses and everything?
Yeah, absolutely.
If I zoom in. Now, of course, this is a JPEG of it, so we're going to see some JPEG.
That's a down-res JPEG. Yeah, that was 1080 by 720.
But you could zoom in on the original, and you just zoom in.
It was sensational.
No,
wow.
Yeah.
That's neat. Here's another another image. You know, I'm starting to recognize, though. I can kind of see the quality of it. Yeah, it's very interesting. It almost looks unreal. It's so good.
It was unreal. Yeah. It was like, to me, it was the best thing going.
Yeah.
You know, because the quality, once you had that low of an ISO and the ability to illuminate the scene, then the dynamic range was phenomenal.
I don't know why this is in here, but these are all the different kinds of geeks. I love it.
Yeah, that's
you're a photo. You're this one here. You're the photo. You're the photo geek
right
there.
That would be me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leo, which one are you?
I'm every kind. See, that's what's cool about me. I am all of those geeks.
You fit the bill on all of them.
Yeah, every one of them is me. Yeah, yeah. I'm a geek in every respect. Here you are teaching at. Is this Photokina? Is this PMA?
That is. Could be PMA, it could be PP of A, or somewhere it's on the Canon booth as an Explorer presentation.
How have fun. I've seen many of those. It's really fun if you get a chance to go to a photo show.
And oh, isn't watch it fun?
Oh, yeah. So you brought up Photoshop, and this is interesting. So when he was one of the first people to create a lab at PPA, at Imaging, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
And tell me about your experience getting software for the computers.
Well, I was the chairman of the digital committee for PPFA back in the mid-90s.
PPFA is the Professional Photographers of Virginia, of America. Got it. All right.
And the PPV is a part of PPFA, by the way. So we kind of had free reign. Nobody knew to tell us no. So we did whatever. We created a conference, a digital conference. It was just a lot of fun. We created a computer lab that would be inside the trade show. And we got computer companies to donate computers and that sort of thing so we could set it up. Anybody could come in and sit down and experience imaging.
When was this? What year? Just to give us perspective.
This had to be 96, 95, 96.
What kind of resistance did you get from photographers at this time?
Oh, just tremendous amount of resistance.
Yeah.
What was the main sort of pushback?
For photographers, the quality. And, you know, to get the quality to get anywhere near what it needed to be for the portrait photographer, that wasn't there quite yet. But there was enough quality in the scan backs and the JVCs that I used. It was coming. You could tell it was coming. There were scanning capabilities, too. We could take negatives and create digital files from portrait negatives to do a variety of things. So there was a lot of digital work back then. But interestingly, as the chairman, when I called Adobe to furnish Photoshop for all the computers in the computer lab, their question to me, the person I talked to, was why would a photographer want to use Photoshop?
Oh, dear. Oh, they wouldn't. You're right. Just turn your back on that market. Well, who was using Photoshop?
Well, that's back when the graphics
shop.
That's back when the graphic artists were making Photoshop be what it is today.
And that was my confusion. It's interesting because I'm thinking 93. Well, Photoshop couldn't have existed before people were using digital photography, but of course, graphic artists used it.
And photographers weren't
and
using
photographers
it.
Photographers didn't. That's actually more recent, despite the name.
Yeah,
that's a more recent use of Photoshop.
Well. Graphic artists were using photographs in Photoshop. But photographers, they really back then had no reason to use it because they weren't, it was kind of a just getting into scanning. The labs, the photographic labs prepared for the digital onslaught back then, but the photographers didn't come that way yet. So having the digital lab and the PPFA conferences, it was a lot of fun. Kind of being on that cutting edge, and we produced a digital conference. I forget what we call it now, but we brought in all the biggies, Katrine Eisman, Stephen Johnson, just all the big people that were in digital back then, Lee Veris, to do presentations. So we got to the top pretty quick, bringing in the top people. It was a lot of fun.
So did Photoshop give you Photoshop?
Oh, no. Oh, they gave us Photoshop for the lab. It was time limited.
Got it. So they came around a little bit. Photoshop version 2.
Well, no, they didn't deny us at all. They worked with us right away. It's just, you know, why would you guys want to use Photoshop, you know?
Yeah, it's just such a different mindset. It's inconceivable almost.
You've got your fingers in so many pies. There's Photoshop. There's color. I want to spend more some time more in color. But you also... I noticed this picture of you with a projector. You promote projectors as well.
Okay. Yes.
What's the story there?
I'll never forget going on tour for Dean Collins. And this was many, many years ago. We did about a 20-25 city tour. And every city I went to, and I'm talking about color. I'm talking about mandating your color. And, because that's so important. So I'd do a presentation, and the projector would just be
awful.
Awful.
Oh, I know. It's horrible.
And I finally got to this one location. I'll never forget. It was in Illinois. It was an Epson projector, and all of a sudden, the color looked fantastic. And for the first time, I did not have to apologize for what I was showing or turn my laptop around and say, this is what
it's not supposed to look this bad.
So I travel with my projector today.
You bring your own?
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
It's the only way to control it.
What do you carry?
I have a Canon SX7, and it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, the luminance and the color. And of course, I calibrate it. And in recent years, probably 6 years ago, Monty Zucker and I did another 20-so city tour. And we took my projector, and in every single location, we had to recalibrate right. to the screen because the projector is consistent from one place
but
to another.
But the screen's not.
The screen changes.
Holy cow.
So we had like 20 different profiles.
Yeah.
And if you look at those in, at one time, if you just change one in one session, you see a dramatic difference yeah. from screen to screen.
Yeah, especially in the blacks, I would imagine, and the whites. But I guess every color.
Just the color.
Sure. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just yeah. amazing.
Interesting.
You do a lot of consulting with color.
I
for
do.
Businesses. What do you, is the number one problem you see photographers in their workflow?
The number one problem I see with photographers in the workflow is they do not calibrate their display, their monitors. That's their number one issue. And that's the single one thing that if you do that, you suddenly have the ability to obtain predictable results.
So do you recommend the use of a spectrophotometer or something that you
I do.
Put on the screen?
I do, a color spectrophotometer.
I call them a color sucker because it looks like they're... Right, sucked onto
the
tube suckers.
Yeah, tube suckers. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So they're actually because you used to do it by eye, with with swatches.
Oh, had to,
so
but this will do it in effect the same thing for you. It's
yeah.
a camera in there, right?
There's a sensor in there.
Sensor, yeah.
And it reads three things. It reads the chrominance or color data. It reads the contrast ratio, and the luminance scale. So, in regards to calibrating a display, the unit does it for you.
Right.
You just tell it, and you don't have to tell it anything.
There's some software that runs, right?
The software runs, right.
And you put the color sucker at a certain point on the screen, and it's looking, the software's putting images into that sensor, reading what it's getting versus what it expects.
Yes.
And then it builds a color profile.
Totally. That's exactly
how it works. It's amazing the difference.
It is.
If you flip, you know, I use Datacolor for mine, Spider. Mm-hmm. And they have a before and after,
yeah.
and usually I think with Macs they go pink, they go magenta and light a little bit. I think it's pretty common, but
that's a big deal because if you're, you know, using Lightroom or Photoshop and fixing your images and your screen is inaccurate, you're making your image look terrible.
Yeah.
On a normal screen, or you don't know, but of course then remember people are going to be looking at it on all kinds of screens.
But if you think about it this way, you're right. You can't control their screens, but if you're off. And
they're,
then they're off
it's
in gonna the
even
same,
be off even more.
The opposite
yeah.
way, then you're
yeah.
really
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
So you can at least close the gap if you're calibrating.
Are the profiles that come with monitors okay? I mean, Apple and Microsoft both now do ICC profiles with the software.
Well, they have they, to, but they're not calibrated
they're not
for photography.
It.
No, they're not
no.
for imaging.
So you really need to do this.
You really do.
And
yeah.
they're not. It's not that. I mean,
no,
it's
it isn't.
$100, but if you're spending yeah. a ton of time,
Spider makes the Spider and also the Color Monkey
yeah. display.
That.
Color Monkey display is okay. the most current version.
Okay.
And that's from X-Rite.
Yeah.
X-Rite,
yeah. So both of those are good.
Yeah, they're both wonderful.
And then do you recommend a colorimeter for your printer as well to calibrate your printer?
Well, calibrating a printer is done automatically. The printer calibrates itself. To create a profile for the printer, I certainly do. A color
okay.
spectrophotometer
okay.
that reads the color patches, that allowing you to create a custom profile.
So then you got an end-to-end solution that you have everything.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's getting into what I call crafting digital.
Yeah.
Because I came from a craftsmanship back in the days. And today with the digital explosion that I call the digital playground, there's so much
out
there.
A bunch of people like me just kind of going, ugh, ugh.
You do a fabulous job, Lee.
I have never calibrated anything. So,
I will come in and I will calibrate
will you suck my screen and spider monkey it or whatever the...
I'm leaving that one
Do the color monkey thing. But, you know, when you talk about that and then I look at your images, it's really true. The color in your images is very vibrant. It's
Thank
very...
You.
It pops out.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's just... you obviously, once you've got color, you play with it.
Once you get the color,
of it.
Well, you know, what I try to do is get the color right up front by
right.
proper white balancing.
Right.
And then calibrating the display, you get to see, you know, what it is you really have.
So talk about color balancing up front. You mean, do you do that with lights? How do you do that?
I'll use the setting on the camera,
uh-huh.
and I'll set it to a Kelvin temperature.
You set the temperature. You don't... Use the auto white balance. You don't. Do you use a white card to do that?
Sometimes I'll do a custom white balance with mm-hmm. a white card.
Mm-hmm.
and I'll use the color checker passport to create the 24-patch color checker just for an insurance policy.
That's something you can just carry around with you.
You just carry it in your pocket.
You put it up on the
thing.
But and if that's, you're not going to carry stuff around, like most people,
I wear something around my neck sometimes.
You
it's
do?
Got a white and a gray. It's got some different cards.
For white balance.
For white balance. Wait a minute. But what you do, here, now tell me if this is a dumb thing to do, but sometimes if I'm going to be taking a lot of shots in a particularly weirdly lit area, I'll put the gray there because then I can use the Lightroom color dropper and say that that's neutral.
That's perfect. Yeah.
So I have one shot in that lighting that I know what I kind of know what's true.
Right.
So that's not crazy.
No, I think it's great. I just think I'm too lazy to carry around. I just don't carry around.
Well, I got one. Just, you just put it around your neck, and you just put it in the shot. You don't have to. Now, do you use sRGB or Adobe RGB? Do you care about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And why do all labs use sRGB?
Well, that's a great question too. I use no color space in the camera because
you use no color space.
No, because I shoot raw.
I don't
shoot JPEG.
So you don't have to make a choice up front. You can make that later.
Make it later when you're processing.
So the color space is the you often say, "Oh, it's got 2 million or 4 billion colors. It's got plenty of colors." But the color space actually kind of carves out that space within that range of colors, right? Is that kind of accurate?
Well, our eyes see billions of colors,
right?
And the digital chip. It's limited.
It's limited. And it has to make choices.
That's right. And if you're going to do anything with this image that you have, then it has to be in what I call a color space home. And if you have a choice, if you're shooting JPEG, I would probably recommend sRGB because it's the safest color space for doing anything. You need sRGB to be on the internet.
Right.
You need sRGB to send to a lab. My personal workflow is Profoto RGB. It's the largest color space.
Okay, now let's get this straight. So in the camera, you're shooting raw, so you don't have to make any choice.
Right.
But when you import it into Lightroom or Aperture or whatever, Photoshop, you are then making a choice, right,
at that point? Yes, I am.
And so you're saying don't use Adobe RGB or sRGB. Use Pro?
Photo RGB. That's my personal choice. Okay. Most people like Adobe RGB, and that's fine.
It's a somewhat wider gamut than
sRGB, and then Adobe's wider, and then Profoto is even wider.
And does Photoshop offer Profoto as one of the choices?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, of course it does.
But you have to go into Adobe Camera Raw and set it up for Profoto. If you're in Lightroom, it's automatically set that way.
Oh, really? Lightroom's by default Profoto?
Yes, and 16-bit, by the way.
So sRGB, why for the web would you use that?
Need to confine whatever.
It's dumber. And most computers can't, right? Most monitors are probably dumb too, right?
Well, I thought S started standard for
smart.
Smart. Yeah. Or small.
Small, probably, yeah.
but by working in Profoto RGB, the larger color space, when I'm ready to go to sRGB, I'm compacting a lot of good information in sRGB rather than starting out there and losing data.
Now, you said 16-bit. What is that all about?
Well, the 16 Photoshop and Lightroom can work in 16-bit data, which is over 65,000 values per color, red, green, or blue, where 8-bit is 256 brightness levels.
I'm surprised anybody works in 8-bit. Isn't
it's
16
slow.
By the... Oh, it's
16
speed.
16 is a lot slower.
It's
lots
twice
more
as
thinking.
Big, yeah.
A lot of thinking.
But if you're shooting RAW and you're working in Lightroom or Aperture, you're working in 16-bit automatically.
Okay.
If you're working in Photoshop, you have to set it up to work in 16-bit.
And it's a lot slower at 16 when you get a lot of layers.
Well, it's a lot slower, but you know what? My images are worth it.
Yeah.
And considering the very beautiful women that you seem to take pictures of, I think that's probably worth
Wait, one quick question
doing.
Before we kind of shift.
Look at that. That's HDR. Now, I could tell HDR when I see it.
Pause on
Well,
video.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Quick question.
Sure.
Because I will retouch an Adobe RGB, but then when it goes time to export sRGB, I notice there's a color shift. It seems to go magenta. Do you have any tips on that sort of export, or is that just...
Okay. I would have to know a little bit more. I haven't seen that unless you're assigning. If you're assigning sRGB, which is in Photoshop, then there's going to be a color shift. And assigning should not even be an option.
Because, I mean, for example, if I have an Adobe RGB and I want to export it for labs, because they all use sRGB.
Are you working in Lightroom or Photoshop?
Either or. It seems to shift. So it's a conundrum. I'll look into it.
Okay. Well, I'll look into it with you. I don't know of the issue myself. I know they're... I don't know of that issue. And here's why. Because when I process into sRGB, I'll go into Adobe Bridge if I'm using Photoshop, select the images, and use the image processor and have it convert to sRGB on the fly.
Don't do it within Photoshop or within Lightroom. Do it in Bridge.
When you export in Lightroom, choose sRGB.
Okay.
And I do that, and I've done that.
So instead of it going convert to profile, you're just taking the file and exporting it out.
Yeah, no reason to convert to profile. That should be, that's there for advanced users anyway.
Got it.
So you should
just
have,
export an sRGB version.
Which is faster and easier anyway.
Yeah, of course. And it's more accurate, perhaps. So I'll get together with you, and we'll connect live online. And we'll take a look at your situation.
All right. Cool. Sounds good. Okay. Sounds good. All right, you can go back to your HDR.
I forgot what I was saying. Oh, yeah. I like this picture of the bus. Look at that.
A little bit of HDR work that started out with the faux HDR settings in Adobe Camera Raw. And then I probably had a little extra treatment. And then I put the streaks in the upper right-hand corner. So, but it wasn't just,
Love those. And then sometimes you don't need to retouch it at all.
Sometimes you don't. There's a tiny bit of skin enhancement there.
Yeah. Tell us about getting the best skin color.
Getting the best skin
color.
That could be
challenging.
That could be tricky.
It is. And what I do with skin color is try to get my skin tone around 4,800 Kelvin in camera, 42 sometimes, and in studio. And that just nails the color for me. And, of course, in Lightroom... Or in Photoshop, I'll go to the adjust maybe the saturation of the reds and oranges.
So you pull the reds and oranges down, the saturation.
I use the slider both ways, depending on the skin tone.
So when you say you get it at 4,800 when you're shooting, how are you accomplishing that?
I'd set the camera, the color temperature.
I've never gone anywhere near that. It scares me. It's not white balance. It's color temperature. It's just a more refined white balance, basically.
It's just telling it white balance
specific
this way.
Temperature, yeah.
Would you do that outside or just in studio?
Mostly in the studio.
Because you have the lights are 4,200 or 4,800, and you're matching the lighting.
No, they're around 5,000, so...
Oh, okay, so you're going a little cooler than the lighting is.
Well, it's oxymoron in the camera. It's a little warmer.
Yeah, because you want... warmer tones.
No, it is cooler. I'm sorry. You're
right. It's a cooler temperature, but you're getting warmer tones out.
But you know, there's something I learned, Leo, and it's this, that in the West Coast of America, photographers like a cooler skin tone than the East Coast. I learned that from Jack Riznicki.
Isn't that interesting? So if you're producing it for an East Coast magazine, go ahead, warmer up.
Yeah, take it to 5,200, 6,500.
You know, we were talking in Norway about, and we were trying to quantify it, how different the light was.
Oh, of course.
So different.
Yeah, and the color.
It seems like the color is a little cooler.
The yellow, I think there's less yellow in the light.
Yeah, it feels a little cooler. Maybe that's the angle of the sun, I don't know.
Because it's a little more magenta and it's a little warm.
Well, that has to do with longitude, latitudes, altitudes.
Yeah. And it lingers forever.
Yeah.
I don't know what she means by that, but
the light
I'm
lingers.
Sure that's true. Oh, the sun never goes down. She's back on that bus, I think. It's, you know, okay.
Oh, my God.
So one way to get a good skin tone is to set the lights for 6K, but set your camera for 42 or 45. Is that?
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth a try. And that's what I do to get consistency.
Right.
Are you always going, whenever you're retouching an image, are you looking at the skin tone first and then letting everything else be secondary?
Oh, yeah. Color is absolutely first, and then tonal values and contrast is second, and then any retouching.
Well, that's interesting.
So are you doing it in that order?
Absolutely.
Color first, then tonal values, levels, things like that.
Right.
And then retouching.
Absolutely.
So why do you do it in that order?
Because if you get too far into the process of retouching, you want to change the color.
you're out of luck.
Could be toast. Of course, these days I work with smart objects, So I'll do the processing in Lightroom, transfer into Photoshop as a smart object, and I'll get to a point. And if I need to go change the skin tone color, and I do sometimes, I'll just double-click on the thumbnail icon. That takes me into ACR, and I have all the settings right there. I've lost no information.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I love that. This is a beautiful image for color.
Thank you. That's Judy.
Yeah. Yeah. Gorgeous. Yeah. Judy, you're gorgeous.
Told you.
Yeah. And I love the green and the yellow. I just really, it's just a beautiful image for color. Do you look, something like this, do you look at the color and say, I want to get some of that green. I really love how that green looks.
The green in the background, I try to,
you're very aware of it as you're shooting.
I'm aware of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the best photographers, we keep hearing this over and over again, try to get it in camera.
To get it in camera, absolutely.
Try to get it in camera. You can work on it later, but always best to get it in camera.
Yeah. When you're teaching Photoshop to photographers, what's the biggest kind of like aha moment, common thing that you teach?
This is my next Christmas card, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Is there one thing that you teach that over and over again, especially me with beginners, that is sort of like, oh.
I really think the aha moments come to see how easy it is to get really great results. So just different levels. I'll have to think about that to see if there's one thing in particular. But
people are surprised.
You know, Photoshop and Lightroom and DPP, they're all wide and deep and they're intimidating. But we're just going in to do two things. We're going in to work in color and with contrast or brightness levels. And once we realize that's all there is to it, then it makes it a lot easier to conform. You need to learn what tools do you want to work with those two things.
I love this one. This is a fun one. Love how you play with the reflection. We're talking to Eddie Tapp. We're going to talk more about color, light, and your tips. Tapp's tips. Coming up in just a little bit on Twit Photo with Catherine Hall. And again, next week, our specials. Next week and the week after on Nordic Light. Wow, did we talk to some amazing people. You know, we talked to Robert Pledge, who's not a photographer.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing.
I spent half an hour with him.
You could have spent 6 hours.
He's a photo editor, which is a real skill. The person who picks the images that go... He's at Contact Press Images.
Contact Press, yeah.
And he had an exhibition of his contact sheets, and big, so that you could see all the images. He said it's interesting to see how the photographer works, how they're thinking, the context of the shot. And then, in grease pencil, he says, that's the shot. Yeah, and it's some amazing shots, many of which you've seen. They're very famous. That he picked, you know, and said, this is it. And it's very interesting. He was a great non-photographer interview,
yes.
I thought.
Yes.
It was really fun. Anyway, that's next week, so make sure you tune in for that. I want to talk right now about Squarespace.com. Everything you need for an exceptional website, including the best hosting. There's nothing better. You cannot take down a Squarespace site because their hosting is so robust, so well designed, that when you need more bandwidth, it's there before you even know you need it. It's automatic. It's also the best software running on top of it. And because they're running both the hosts, the servers, and the software, it's a very secure solution too. And I really, really like that. Nowadays, and we're really learning this. We're learning this ourselves at Twit. When you run your own servers, you manage them yourself, and you're running your own software on top of that, there's all sorts of opportunities for security problems, not on Squarespace. It's their servers, their software. They keep it up to date. They keep it secure. You're really safe on a Squarespace site. And I have to say, there's a lot to be said for that. I'm thinking more and more what a great idea that is. We do run our Inside Twit blog there. I'm moving my Leoville blog there. If you're a photographer, you should especially look at the gallery templates they have. They've got dozens of great templates, hundreds of great styles. You can use the Google fonts for free. This is all included in the package. 300-plus beautiful fonts. Look at the examples to see what people are doing with Squarespace sites in every category. Photos, e-commerce, just personal sites and blogs. It's just really wonderful. Now, here's the deal. If you go to Squarespace.com, you'll see a big green button that says try it free. Do try it free. There it is right there. Because you get 2 weeks of everything. It's not limited, and you don't need to give them a credit card or anything, just your name, the name of your site, a password, and you really get a chance to build something. If you like it, then go look at the pricing. It's an amazing deal. They've restructured their pricing, so it's very straightforward. Basically, there's two plans, standard and unlimited. Look what you get, unlimited. Unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage and a whole lot more. $16 a month when you buy a year plan. $8 a month for the basic plan. This is very, look, you're not, get, you know, you're getting affordable web hosting for very little money, and yet you're not giving up anything in terms of security, performance, customization. It's just incredible. Right now, they're even offering free domain name registration with an annual plan subscription. So when you sign up for an annual plan, they will tell them the domain you want to use. They'll do all the setup. They'll throw in the cost of registering the domain. And they'll give you 10% off, too, when you use our special offer code, TwitPhoto5. TwitPhoto and the number 5. So try it free. You don't need the code for that. And you don't need a credit card. You don't need anything. Just try it free. If you decide to buy, do use TwitPhoto5 to save. In fact, if you do the year plan, you'll save even more. 10% off plus free domain registration at squarespace.com. Really, really great stuff. We're talking to Eddie Tapp. He's a great photographer, a great educator, too, really. I think at least half or more of what you do now is educate.
Pretty much most of what I do today.
Most of what you do, yeah. Photoshop, color, all of that, yeah.
But I teach lighting, too.
And lighting.
The workshops I teach today include shooting with outdoors or indoor studio, but photographing models.
If I've learned one thing on this show, it's how important lighting is.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't bring lights with me, and I have to start all over and rethink this. You need to learn lighting. It's so valuable.
Well, light is...
That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't light have writing. To necessarily bring stuff with you, but you have to be aware, and you have to learn how to shape.
Yeah.
Having shaping tools, if nothing else than a reflector.
A bouncer, yeah.
A reflector would be good.
Yeah. Well, look at this, for instance. Tell us a little bit about how you made this image. This would look like natural lighting.
It is totally natural light. There's no light modifiers there.
Because you really can't get a reflector on a rock upside down. Okay, sorry. however, you have a strong sunlight coming in from the right there.
Yes.
Which is giving you nice modeling and highlights.
Yes, I love to get three-dimensional light in my images.
Well, especially with
so
athletes.
So you're not afraid to go hard either.
Yeah, no,
go hard. Or go
and
home.
And always.
Yeah.
And where are you, just standing there in a nice, safe place? As she's
I'm
hanging?
Standing up on a rock. I'm in a safe place. She's in a dangerous place.
No kidding.
Are you using your, which, by the way, you brought your 70 to 300?
I brought my 70 to 300, and chances are, yes, that probably was the lens.
I have to say, I'm impressed by how light it is.
Yeah.
That's a great lens.
So anyone of you have the 70 to 200, it's actually lighter.
I have the 70. Let me try, because I have the 70 to 200.
It feels
F2.8,
really nice.
Which I really like.
Feel
it's fast.
It.
How fast is this?
That's a 4.56.
Oh, it's really light. It is lighter than the 200.
Yeah.
It's only 200. And longer.
It feels kind of like a toy lens compared to 7200.
Yeah. That's...
And it's wonderful to work with. I love it. It's sharp.
Yeah. Just wow, that's great.
So for photographers that aren't in low lighting situations,
he's using
you would recommend
button focus,
this.
By the way, I just want to point out. As all good photographers
as
do.
As all good photographers do. As all good photographers should.
She got my camera and said, I can't focus this thing. What's going on?
I know. I need, and it's just as easy as setting it up. Maybe you can help me right after this.
I will.
I have my camera.
I've been experiencing...
Well, 1,000. What kind of card is in here?
A Delkin card. It's their fastest card.
You have 1,000 shots. It's
left?
Big. Oh, because you have the two cards. So you shoot with both.
Oh, there's
both.
Two cards.
That's
the
Mark
SCF III. And SD.
Right.
Is that confusing when you're downloading, having different formats?
It is, only because I haven't learned how that works yet.
This is the new thing in the Mark III, and I know Nikon's done it with some of the four D4 and so forth. They have two cards in them, and there's two ways to do it. One is just double the capacity. The other would be to duplicate. And see, if I'm doing a wedding, I would think you'd want to use the redundant mode. That way you get...
I would think so,
does it
too.
Slow it down, though?
No, it shouldn't.
Because you're writing.
These things are monster processors in here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And these cards have gotten a lot.
So you get 216, you just get and you marry.
That's what I would do. And then that way, if one dies.
You could just get 232s, then you never have to change cards, and they're backed up. That is a very good idea.
See what I'm saying?
I'm learning.
Know where I'm going with this?
Going to SanDisk on this.
This is an interesting one because this is monochrome plus color. Is that right?
It is. Well, it's a color image and just monochrome painted.
So there's a perfect example of sometimes you want both black and white and color. Yeah. And that way she really stands out in the...
Her skin tone. Golden skin tone.
Do you like the magic hour? Do you wait for that?
Absolutely.
It's one of the reasons we love Norway, because it's 4 hours of magic hour.
I know.
It starts at 6 p.m. and goes to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
The sun just goes like, no, I'm not going to set. I thought I was going to set. I don't want to set.
That's what I mean. It lingers.
It lingers.
Yes, yeah. It does.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely be there the whole time.
That's
the only problem
is if
we went on the Lightroom adventure to Iceland.
That was another place.
I would have been never sleeping.
Yeah.
How do you rest when there's always beautiful light?
You never sleep. Here's the same woman in the same scenario, but with the color and the rocks. That's beautiful too.
Thank you.
You have to just know. You have to look at it and say, this one I'm gonna take the color out. This one I'm gonna. Do you play with it? Do you play when you're in Lightroom? Do you play around? Do you try stuff? Do you experiment?
Oh, absolutely.
You don't always know right away. Oh, I'm gonna do it this way.
No. Sometimes I'll shoot and I know I'm going to do something with that shot, and. Most of the time, I like the shot, and I'm going to take it into a process. So once I have the color and tone the way I want it, then I'll take it to a creative mode and explore
fun.
And have fun.
Yeah. And because it's not destructive, actually, it's really easy to go back and forth.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that image was, I knew I wanted to do something
right.
with that image.
But why? Yeah.
I may not even be finished with it yet.
Yeah. Oh. That's the other problem is when do you stop?
Now,
you must have used lights here. This looks like you have some lights.
I used a strobe on this one, mm-hmm. Softbox. And with Profoto, and
is that because you wanted to be able to see the sky? You were using it as fill, essentially, because the sky is very bright behind.
Yeah, that was the main light. Yeah. The light coming from behind her, giving a little skim light on the left side, on her right side, mm-hmm. was important to me. You know, to get that separation.
Yes. Yeah. Here's a great example of. Nice balance of the light because you have this beautiful dark background. It's dusk.
That was shot with a umbrella, strobe light, modeling lamp. Not strobed. I didn't use a strobe, just the modeling
that
lamp.
That explains the warmness. So you've watched digital go through all these evolutions. Where do you think it's going with cameras such as Lytro and other devices coming out?
I have a Lytro, as a matter of fact.
You do?
And I love it. It's fun.
Do you
love
really?
It?
Absolutely.
What is it about it that you like? Is it gimmicky? Is it going to catch?
I like the gimmicky part of it, but...
That's a good way to put it. Yes, it's gimmicky. So what? No, it's fun.
Because so
the thing about the Lytro, for people who don't know, it's taking a single image, but you can choose the focal point after the fact.
Yes.
And the gimmick is, of course, and I'm actually surprised to hear somebody like Eddie say I like it, because most photographers, I would think, would say, well, I'll actually choose that when I take the picture. Thank you very much.
Because that's what I would say.
Because that's kind of what you do, is you say, well, I'm going to choose the focal plane, and I'm going to choose what's in focus and what's not in focus. But the Lytro, I guess, is kind of fun because you can mess around with it after the fact.
Well, on Earth Day, I had a Lytro session. Okay, I'm going to do Earth Day shots with the Lytro camera. And flowers and bees and snails and
you can pull them and
yeah,
focus.
Yeah, it's just kind of fun. So
I think that's key to staying interested in photography after many years is the playfulness and the willingness to try different things and experiment and always go out there and try something new.
It is. I'm just so full of ideas that I want to do. I shared some of those with Catherine the other day. But one of the things that we're segueing into, of course, is the age of motion.
Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example. This image is full of motion. Look at that.
She is quite the athlete.
Yeah, and look at that, the tone on her body. It's amazing.
So the age of motion, what does that mean?
Video.
Digital
video.
So do you shoot video too?
Well, not as much as I want to right now, but... I'm getting into a little bit of that. Of course, I love stills. I love seeing light and working in it. I love finding light where I'm working in that, too.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking digital video this way and that way.
You know, it's funny because I kind of kicked myself when we were in Norway that everybody was shooting stills, so I shot stills. I wish I'd shot video. Would have been a nice thing to have. We actually shot video interviews. But I just mean, I kind of like, there's this new thing I kind of think in terms of, it's still photography, but instead of taking a single still image, you take a few seconds of video. So it's almost like a still image that's got a little movement in it.
Oh,
and then making a photo album of those, It's just, it's like somewhere in between video in terms of storytelling and the still image.
Well, we were just in Hana. I did a little promo for a friend of ours, bungalow there. And it's mixed with just that. It's got stills and little clips of video that...
It's still almost a photo album, but it's a live photo album.
Yeah, you're seeing one still frame, and all of a sudden you see the waves come in.
Yeah, kind of like that.
From a storyline standpoint. So you didn't finish. So you play with the light show. What is it that you like? What's fun about it?
The compositions, you challenge yourself to get a good composition. So I really enjoy the compositions that I create with it.
Yeah, because that's what you're playing with now is... What's inside the box? What's the shapes are?
Well, in some of them, I don't even look for that three-dimensional thing. I look for the composition.
Huh.
And then when I go to look at them, the 3D thing is like, wow, that's interesting. So it's fun. It's fun to do. I have a Hoodman loop, you know, where you can look at the back of the camera.
Yeah.
And I use that for the Lytro.
Oh, interesting.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can actually see, you can see better what
you
you're doing.
You see better, yeah.
Yeah, I have a Hoodman. I should probably... That's a good idea, yeah. This is cute.
She ended up being in a magazine in Singapore with that image.
Oh, fun. This is interesting because black, we were talking about monochrome. This almost looks like a silver print. It's just beautiful, the way the tones come
texture
out.
Texture and tones, yeah. When you are changing things to black and white, any tips on that process?
Well, of course, it's all about tonal values, but I use the Nick plugin.
Oh, the silver effects. Yeah. We love
can't
those.
Live without
I
it.
Cannot
so
live
great.
Without those
yeah.
either.
There may be some images of Yosemite in there, and when I brought that image into Nick, it was... I've been trying to do this for years, and all of a sudden
get that Ansel Adams look.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What filters are you using? Different ones? Are you manipulating them a lot? Are you using their canned ones? What do you gravitate towards?
I kind of start out with the canned settings, which I find to be perfectly adequate for what I'm doing. But I will maybe increase the detail slider a little bit here and there, and sometimes. If I'm getting really excited about an image, I might just go explore. Those sliders are there to have fun with, and you can always put them back. Mm-hmm. So I try not to be too limiting.
Yeah, it's N-I-K, and it's the silver FX.
N-I-K.
Here's an example.
Is one of them.
Yeah, yeah, really gorgeous, really beautiful. It almost looks alive.
That's using a neutral density filter to get the nice smooth water.
So by doing that, you were able to do a much longer exposure. How long is the exposure?
That was about a 2-second exposure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. That's a good way to do that. Put an ND on. Of course.
And it had just rained right
there. Oh, so the rocks are wet.
The best
That was ideal condition.
Listening.
This is an example of a still that is alive, that is moving. You really feel that it's there. It's
well,
alive.
Thank you, Leo.
It's happening. This is one where nothing's happening.
That was during a workshop. There is something happening.
There's a guy
there.
Way in the back.
So one of my students, what do you want to do? I want to be a street photographer. So we went out and did street photography that night.
Yeah.
That's a street.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Me too. I'm very interested.
Yeah,
look at that. Look at the water. This water looks
really
like a rock.
Beautiful.
He's windsurfing on rocks.
That was fun to shoot from a helicopter.
Ugh. Wow. And that's why the waves are chopping
like that.
I'm not doing helicopters. Sorry. I'm not doing it. Here's some more of that water. Look at that. 2 seconds, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And a 50% ND filter on there to give you a little more time to expose.
Why ND versus a polarizing when using water? No particular, just what you have?
Just what I
What you have on you?
Use, yeah. Well, I have the polarizer. I have an 8 f-stop polarizer, that I use now. And I haven't been back shooting those since I've got that 8 f-stop polarizer.
This is beautiful.
Tiffin.
I love that. Yeah.
Do you have a particular brand of polarizers that you gravitate towards? I mean, filters, sorry.
You're talking about like Tiffin?
Yeah.
Tiffin is my choice of filters.
Another one. There's a lot of variety in your work. It's interesting.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad of that. That's one thing I love I love photography so much, and I love the variety of it. I always have.
Right.
Even back when I had my little studio, I had a 713 square foot studio.
I love how you include the 13 feet.
That's what I paid rent for.
Boy, you can't. So let me tell you, when you get that low.
When you do get that tiny, foot, every little foot, yeah.
And I had 1, 2, 3 dark rooms in that studio.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
And a 9 by 12 foot camera room.
Wow.
And I used to shoot groups, bands, with groups of 10, 12 people in that 9 foot seamless.
He used to be a drummer back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, is this,
I can see it.
Is this underwater?
That is underwater. That's a that is a shark and
a remora eel on the back. Yeah,
there's 3, 4 fish in that.
There's
image.
Another couple. Yeah. Now this is interesting because I think a lot of people with this picture would say, "Oh, the color is what it's all about, right?" Because I'm sure it's fairly colorful, but I like the choice because you see the textures. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's actually a 30 by 40 frame print in my dining room.
Ah, it's gorgeous.
I love that.
A lot of detail. Beautiful. You didn't. It's 35 millimeter though. You didn't take that with a medium format, did you? It looks like medium format.
No, that was the 60, a Canon 60.
Yeah, that's great. Look at that.
As was that. That was the same shark.
Oh. Oh, scary. See, there's the color. Is that C-cam? Is that a body around the Canon?
It is.
It's an underwater body.
The C-cam is a product that you can buy for various different cameras.
Yeah, you get to fit what you're. Yeah. Look how that's really interesting. And you're able to do all the knobs and dials and fiddly bits and everything? Well, no, I mean, it's.
That. The ability is there.
You have access.
You prefer
as
not to.
As me, I tell you, I teach workshops, underwater workshops, with Stephen Frink, who's the professional underwater photographer. So I'm just kind of learning.
Yeah. Well, you're doing all right for somebody just getting started.
Well, thank you.
These are fun. So let's get your tips, Eddie Tapp. Tapp's tips.
Okay.
Do you have them in front of you?
Because
I have to. I'm still looking at fish. I'm sorry. I can't stop. I love the underwater stuff, but this is, again, the variety is amazing. Look at this. This could be. This looks like straight out of.
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
That's actually beautiful. In the North Georgia Mountains.
It's beautiful. Tara.
Yeah.
So 90% of color correction basics.
The 90% method of color correction basics. The reason I wanted that to be a tip is because I developed that technique, which is based on the white point, black point correction, back in 1993. It's nothing new, and it works today just as powerful as it did back then. As a matter of fact, I don't know of any color correction technique on the computer that works any finer than that. But you have to have a pure white and a pure black source. So it's a Photoshop technique.
The 90% method. Okay. And we could find this probably in a book of yours, I hope.
You can actually find it on my website.
It's on the website.
It's on great. It's on my website.
Which is a great resource, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So there's 6 or 8 pages there, and it just goes over. That's actually a very old PDF file, and I purposely kept it old because that's never going to change.
Some things are constant.
Yeah, it's very classic. It's a very classic technique. Also, in teaching classes, that would be the one technique. That would be an aha moment when the students learn that technique.
Mm-hmm.
When they learn that, I go and everything else is smooth sailing. The 90% method of color correction will teach you how to get the best, or to remove a color cast. And to me, it's the best method I know to remove a color cast.
I need to learn this. I'm trying to memorize this right now. So the idea is to neutralize a white zone where there's detail and a black zone where there's detail.
Thank you, because I call that zoning rather than points.
Okay.
Because you don't want to get white pointing is forcing the 3 color values, red, green, and blue,
right,
to go to
a point.
A point. If you go to a zoning, you can choose any level. It doesn't have to be the brightest or the darkest. It can be at least pure white or pure black zone is my description.
Uh-huh.
And once you match the numbers of those zones, that's when
everything else falls
into
place.
That's when you start smiling.
Yeah. All right, I'm saving this. This is also on the website. You can find it.
You get a lot accomplished.
EddieTapp.com. I'm always learning, I'll tell you. And this is one I was going to ask you about for diving and those underwater shots. They're so clear. They're so beautiful. They're so crisp.
There has to be
a reason
for that.
Yeah, they are. They're a must. So tell us about getting the spots out.
How about that?
Well, you're going to get this anytime you're shooting in water. You're going to get backscatter because there's particles in the
water. That is actually
water,
the first thing I noticed with the fish.
And they catch light. So what do we do?
Well, it's another Photoshop technique. It's very simple to do. This is also, if this isn't on my website, I'll make sure it gets there soon. But it's just a technique where you use a filter in Photoshop to take the spots out, then you go back with a history brush, back up once in history, so you have the spots back, but you tell the history brush to work from the point where there is no spots, and just using blending options, it's all described there, you just paint those out. Incidentally, that was a magazine article for Dive Magazine. Or an article I did for Dive Magazine. But I have to tell you that the technique itself, get the spots out, I developed that back during the days in the mid-90s also. It's another classic technique. Excuse me for a second.
It would work for dust, for...
Dust spotting.
Yeah.
And I used to call that the Back to the Future scanner dust spotting technique.
Back when we were all using scanners.
Yeah.
Right. And you'd always have a little bit of something. Something.
But it's the exact same technique.
Isn't that interesting?
But what this actually allows you to do once you go through the steps, it allows you to remove those spots in a few minutes.
So you're spending only a couple minutes during this process.
Because this is painstaking. I can remember when we were in Tasmania, who was the photographer who was taking underwater shots? And so we would come back at this Lightroom adventure every night with our photos. I remember him spending hours, one by one.
Oh, yeah.
Dot, dot, finding every bit of dust.
That would drive me crazy.
If he'd only known the tap method.
Well, this actually came from... I photographed a catalog, 4x5. I scanned all the images in. Beautiful scanner. And I went to retouch the image, and I noticed all these spots because the scanner was so good. And I did just that. One spot at a time. And I realized, wait a minute, it's going to take me a month to do this. So I dug into Photoshop and found a technique.
And it stands still today.
Today, and if you do restorations, that technique will
same
be
thing.
The
oh,
first
huge.
Thing you want to do
yeah.
is,
same
is
thing.
That technique.
So let's get this on the website, EddieTapp.com. And now your third tip. This is so good. I'm learning so much.
Why is it good to be soft sometimes?
Soft focus. Soft focus.
The Monty Zucker, what I call the Monty Zucker soft focus filter. It's a unique filter. We have the blurs filter in Photoshop.
Yeah.
And they're all good, but what this technique really resembles is the old soft tar filter on the Hasselblad. And basically, when you go through this filter, and this is on my website, by the way, you will blur the image, and then using a darken blend mode at a certain opacity, duplicate that with a lighten blend mode at a different opacity. So you're merging lighten and darken at the same time. And in the darkroom, what we would used to do was use a soft focus filter on the lens and go in the darkroom and diffuse print and to get that type of effect.
So this can do it. And now, is the filter a download filter or is this something built into Photoshop? Or?
Oh, no, it's the Gaussian blur filter.
It's just the Gaussian blur filter.
Yeah, everything's in there.
This is all done with the Gaussian blur.
Yeah.
Oh.
And blending
using the
options.
Right blending options, yeah.
And a mask. Because once you've
I
done
see
that,
you have the mask here, that you create a mask
right.
of her face.
You want to mask back the eyes and the eyebrows and nostrils. And
soften the skin, but not the...
It's a soft focus technique.
Right.
Now, I have skin softening techniques that are different from this.
Okay.
But this is a soft focus filter.
For the whole image.
For the whole image.
Why do you create the mask then?
Because to bring back sharpness in the eyes and lips.
You don't want to have soft pupils. You don't want to have soft...
Right. A lot of photographers will sharpen eyes and lips
right.
and eyebrows.
Right.
So I don't particularly do that, but I'll use the soft filter and then bring back...
Restore the
restore,
original
yeah,
clarity.
Yeah.
Three great tips.
Thank you.
So, I think we have a new website for you, TapsTips.com.
TapsTips. I like
that. Yeah, I know. Me too.
It's a great idea.
So you have a lot of teaching coming up. Where can people find you?
Well, there's a lot of things coming up that aren't even on my website just yet. But they at eddietapp.com is my website. And there's a schedule page there. Thank you, Leo.
You've got that cruise coming up in October. Yeah.
That's going to be so fun.
Oh, yeah.
Where's the cruise? Bermuda?
It's going to start. Okay. It's actually going to start in New Jersey and go to Bermuda.
Oh, great.
And it's going to be right after Photo East.
Oh, perfect. So right when the conference ends.
Yeah, right when it ends. So it's going to be the ideal time to have fun.
This is great.
We have a workshop planned for Savannah coming up in October. And we're also planning a extravaganza type of workshop in Hawaii after the first of the year. Meaning,
life is tough. Is what that means.
Well, somebody I know. Look at you smiling over there.
The extravaganza means it's going to be at four different locations, different times, and you can choose one or all of those.
And the E techniques is probably
that's where you find
a place to go to find it.
And the soft focus methods there too.
Soft focused as well.
Very, very cool. So you give away a lot of stuff as well. EddieTapp.com. Eddie, what a pleasure meeting you.
Well, thank you.
And you brought your favorite gear. I assume that the lens is one of them.
Yep.
The lens is.
Took a look at that. Yeah.
This is the 5D Mark III, the brand new camera.
See, I've been resisting.
I don't know why. You should just get it and
I'll tell you why, because it's almost
$4,000. And fall on it.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
Yeah. Yours is okay, though.
I hope. You know, it works.
I like the 5D Mark II a lot, and I'm looking at the Mark III, and every time I play with hers, I go, this feels really nice. Why should I go to the Mark III?
You might as well just do it, because it's going to be another 3 years.
Give me some reasons to buy a Mark III, Eddie.
Well, by the way, I'm right in the middle of recording a series of videos for Canon. As a matter of fact, on their digital learning, Canon's Digital Learning Center, I have about 40 videos online now.
Wow, that's
how
great.
To use...
And these are free and available on Canon's site. Yeah.
Free. How to use Digital Photo Professional, which is the free software raw processor that comes with Canon cameras. And I'm updating that now for some of the updates for the Mark III. And one in particular I want to mention to you is that it now has an HDR function in the
built
camera.
Built in.
Built in. So you can set it to be auto exposure, one stop or two stops, or even a three stop EV. And as soon as you click the shutter once, it creates the three
exposures.
That's
nice. Because now what I'm doing is I'm setting it.
And then you can
move
the camera,
I press
too,
it
when you're switching things.
Take three shots.
You don't have to do that now.
You can just
set
it automatically.
It just does it automatically.
It should. That's much better.
It just feels better.
All right. That's one. Okay, that's one reason. What else? It does feel better. That's two.
So, let's see.
It's got two cards.
The video, how yours ran out of video twice as fast.
Yeah, because I had to stop every 10 minutes. We had to stop.
Yeah, versus...
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's four.
It's got a double processor in it.
It's faster.
It's a lot faster.
The digit processor.
The digit processor.
Yeah.
So this is the next technology up. I'm very excited.
You're going to end up getting it, so you might as well just get it now so you can enjoy it longer.
That's a good point. get a couple extra months.
That's the ultimate tip on why you should get it.
And what else you have there? I think you have an app that you're going to be doing. You want to talk about that?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm working on the app now. It's basically about seeing light. And let me get to the front page here.
Oh. Sorry.
You just put it right there, yeah?
Yeah.
I probably have to take it out of this thing here. Here we go.
We have a shot all set up.
So we just have to lean a little bit.
Okay. So it's called Image Light. And what I'm going to do with this... when it gets finished.
There's the other side, of the reverse of that picture from the dive article.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and there's no backscatter in that one either.
No.
Well, what do you know?
It only takes a couple minutes. You can
do
it
so
to
I
all
hear.
Of them.
But with this is called See the Light, and it's just kind of talking about visualizing light, how to see light. And there'll be another page about Be the Chip. So here there'll be some technical information regarding how the chip sees light, and getting into just a little bit of technical information here. Moon shadow, talking about shadows. This is...
Oh, that's pretty, yeah.
Not quite finished yet.
So you're writing this now.
I'm in the middle of working on it right now. Not too far away from the end of it. Light quality. And this one's an important chapter here, talking about the actual quality of light. So then I get into, and that picture is missing, but just getting into just different aspects and the quality of light, how to notify spectre highlights and spectre details, that sort of thing. Color temperature, talking about the different color temperatures of light. A little bit more technical information. I've got several pages of what I call cool tips, you know, shooting in twilight. Whoops. Creating twilight images. What I call the 20-degree rule, which is 20 degrees from sunset, sunrise, the 20 degrees and the last 20 degrees of sunset, about not white balancing the camera, using a preset there rather than to use auto white balance might throw things off or custom.
But now I shoot raw, it shouldn't matter, right?
Well, no, you can, if you're shooting raw, you can always change that slider.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this just gives you powerful information to learn from.
Right.
So I want to get this right in the camera now.
Yep.
And if you want to get this beautiful glow, orange
look at
sunset,
that. Oh,
then,
that's beautiful.
You know, you really don't want to white balance that shot.
Right, right.
So it's, these kind of tips are going to be in there.
Very
so,
good.
Well, that's great, yeah.
Oh, well, that's somebody how to use this thing. So this is in the works right now. Visions of Light, that's just my...
So it's a book, essentially.
It's basically a little iBook.
Yeah.
And it's just intended to be for inspiration.
And learning, yeah.
Yeah. But thanks for letting me show that.
Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate you coming by.
Well, thank you.
EddieTapp.com. Two P's.
Yeah.
Two D's. Two P's and
two
I.
Two D's. Oh, yeah. Well, you're fast, Leo.
Next week, bugs.
Yeah. So wait, before we, there's a couple things I want to wrap up since we are on apps. My app,
Is it almost ready?
We are finishing this week.
Now, I got to say, Catherine used this while we were in Norway, and I was blown away.
I think
this is going to be a very popular app.
Yes. So
this is for photographers who need model image releases.
Yes. And
model releases.
I can't explain to you, using it in Norway, how much I completely fell in love with it.
Yeah. Well, it's
so
your app,
awesome.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But it's going. We're finishing this week, and...
So cool, because I'll give you the plug. So she's taking a picture. She has a model. It was really cute. Some of the students came up and volunteered.
Yeah.
And said, would you take pictures? And she said, yeah. They were jumping up and down. They were so happy. They were literally, I don't know if you saw that afterwards. And so you took pictures. Now, it's on the iPad. You take a picture of them. So you have a picture in the release. So you know who it's a release
that
for.
That is actually huge, especially when you're traveling.
And then they sign it on the iPad, so you have the signature on the iPad.
And then the best thing, too, is it emails it right away. So model releases always...
You could lose the iPad.
It always freaks me out because I think, oh, I only have one copy of this paper, and I'm traveling.
Right.
So you have the paper with the photo and everything. You can make as many custom releases as you want and languages.
And they're written by a lawyer.
Oh, yeah. Lawyer... has approved everything.
Yes.
And approved
lawyer
by
Getty. Approved, photographer enjoyed.
Photographer crafted, lawyer approved.
Is that your tagline?
Yes.
Who knew?
Yeah.
I guess
so,
I must have
And then
known.
Another app, too, that I've been playing with for those cat lovers out there.
Rick Salmon has a cat app.
Rick's Big Cats. So he's
he has
been,
a book.
He travels,
this is his book, I think.
He
right?
travels everywhere. No, I don't think it's a book.
It's not a book. It's just
but,
an app.
So he thought, he has all these pictures of cats from all of his travels.
He's so funny.
That's Rick. A famous one, yeah.
I love Rick.
Yeah, so he put together this app. It's only 99 cents.
If,
and
you, like
if
cats,
you like cats.
Big cats. Not little cats.
Big cats.
No little kitty cats here.
So it's fun.
Wow, look at these.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's really neat.
So.
Cool. Next week we're going to talk about insects?
Yeah, we have... Next week's going to be great.
Catherine Chalmers
does
macro photography, and in particular, macro photography of bugs.
Cockroaches, Leo. Cockroaches.
Oh, no. I might skip this one. Ooh, it's gooey. All right. If you want to know how to do that, houseflies, cockroaches, rodents, it's all next week on the Twit Photo.
So it's going to be a really great episode. We have insects and... Yeah,
oh.
See, look.
They're giant cockroaches.
Just don't eat beforehand.
Oh, we do this. We do this show, so you know when to avoid it. 1:30 Pacific. Actually, it won't be next week. It'll be in 3 weeks.
And I have to say one other thing.
I'm confused. Next week is Nordic Light.
Oh no, yeah. No, wait. No, next week is. Oh wait, no. Next week is Catherine Chalmers, then Nordic
Then Nordic Light. Oh, I've been saying it wrong.
Because we have to edit everything.
It takes some more time to edit. Okay.
Yeah.
So Catherine is on the 15th.
Yes.
On the 22nd and the 29th.
Is Nordic Light.
That's our Nordic Light specials.
Sorry. So the last two weekends in May.
Yes.
And one other thing, and the chat room said this. I'm sorry I didn't catch the name, but it's so true. Autofocus with the 5D Mark III.
It's better.
Much faster.
Okay.
And if you're using your 8512, it really matters.
I was just thinking of going Nikon and getting a D800. I got the battery
already.
We can't
be friends.
I bought the battery. Not the camera. Just the battery.
Actually, I have your D800 battery.
What? You do?
Yeah, you gave it to me. I think
what are you doing with it?
I don't know. I'm going to give it away on Google Plus or something.
Well, what if I buy the camera? Can I have the battery
back? I'll hold on to it.
We do this show every Tuesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Time, 20:30 UTC at twit.tv. Please tune in live. It's great to have the chat room. We watch you. And
We love your chat
room. It's nice to know that you're there watching us. But if you can't watch live, you can always watch after the fact. We make audio and video available always on the Twit website, twit.tv, and everywhere podcasts are aggregated, including iTunes. Just search for Twit Photo. Catherine Hall is at Catherine Hall Studios. That's CatherineHall.net or CatherineHallStudios.com.
Yes.
Did you have a tip this week, a blog?
I figured we had so much.
All right. Just go to the website.
I'm still recovering from Norway.
Poor girl. Her foot is torn up. Her camera, we just don't even know. So, CatherineHall.net. That's the place to go for Catherine's stuff. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twit Photo.